You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
I don't think anyone should think this is a license to continue to breach copyright. INET is not responsible for stopping it.
There's no real demand for censorship of the internet in Australia. There's no other country in the Western world, at least, that's trying anything like this.
Netflix aren't better at anything, but we think we've got something, and we call it the iPad.
And today, we're delighted to be present at the creation of digital radio in Australia.
Senator Conroy is completely botching the implementation of this filtering policy of his.
For adults who want to be able to watch the other material, we're not proposing to do that.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McCollum and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. As Australians approach the next federal election, touted for as early as next month, politicians are scurrying around the country like a plague of locusts, spreading the word about their vote-winning policies and dousing the flames of those which could contribute to their demise. This week saw the controversial plans to filter the internet shelved by the Gillard government for at least 2 years. As the government clears the decks for the coming federal election and facing a strong backlash against this policy, Communications Minister Stephen Conroy ordered a year-long review into the content that has been refused classification. Conroy said that the government would recommend a review of RC guidelines to state and territory ministers, following consultation with the Federal Minister for Home Affairs, Brendan O'Connor. And a spokesman for Senator Conroy said the filter, which was a 2007 Labor election promise, would not be implemented until 12 months after the legislation was passed. The opposition said the delay was a humiliating backdown. Members of the Parliamentary Cyber Safety Committee have criticised the new Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, for standing behind her party's controversial internet filtering proposal. Representatives from Internode, Yahoo 7, and the Australian Information and Industry Association, and the Australian Library and Information Association opposed the proposal, recommending the use of commercially available software and educational initiatives instead. The delay comes after a fierce anti-filter campaign from activist organisation GetUp, and criticism from internet companies such as Google and the United States government. They have warned that the filter will not be effective, could slow the internet, and would set a dangerous precedent for web censorship. Google Australia and New Zealand Managing Director Karim Temps-Romani said she was pleased that the government had taken account of genuine concerns about refused classification content. The review was announced as three of Australia's largest internet service providers, Telstra, Optus and Primus, agreed to block a list of child abuse websites compiled by the Australian Communications and Media Authority. Senator Conroy said the government's commitment to force ISPs to filter refused classification content from the internet had not wavered. So it appears that the incumbent federal government, which seems to have a make policy on the go approach, has struck yet again, pushing the controversial internet filter to after the next poll, hoping that Australians have a short memory. Hopefully, that isn't the case. But unfortunately, unless there's a change of government, it looks like we haven't seen the end of the Great Australian Firewall.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Austar begins streaming live content to its customers over the web. Adam wants a new high-tech vacuum cleaner. Conroy delays the filter. VHA update mobile data plans. The NBN launch new sites. And yet another newcomer to Twitter. Yes, Conroy's department joins the Twitterverse. First up, though, here's Dr. Ron with the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the proposed net filter legislation is put on hold for at least 12 months. eBay releases a new application for Android handsets. Apple bans a rogue developer from its iTunes store. There are concerns that social networking is making us shallow. And a Swiss solar-powered aircraft flies 26 hours non-stop. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The Gillard government has shelved its proposed mandatory ISP-level net filter for at least 12 months. The delay was announced by the Minister for Broadband, Communications and the Digital Economy, Senator Stephen Conroy, on Friday last week. Senator Conroy said that a review would instead be conducted into the adequacy of Australia's classification system to make sure that it met community standards and that the introduction of an ISP-based net filter would not take place until this review had been finalised. Senator Conroy said that the review of the classification system, conducted in cooperation with each of Australia's states and territories, would take approximately 12 months. Senator Conroy spoke at a telecommunications and finance sector dinner in Sydney last week and said that both he and the new Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, had been in discussion about the net filter proposal. He said that both he and the Prime Minister realised there were community concerns about what material would and would not be blocked.
We both acknowledge there is concern in some sections of the community that the filter could get in the way of legitimate use of the internet. She encouraged me to engage with the industry and to come up with a package of measures to address these concerns.
The proposed net filter has caused heated debate in the internet industry and attracted considerable criticism from free speech advocates. Green Senator Mr. Scott Ludlam said the news was a partial win for opponents of the filter. Telstra, Optus and Primus, representing about 70% of all Australian internet users, said that in the meantime they would voluntarily block a list of known websites which depicted child abuse. In other news this week, popular online auction site eBay has announced a new mobile interface for users of handsets running the Android operating system. Android is available on many smartphones and PDAs manufactured by HTC, and the new application allows eBay users to search, buy, pay, and check the status of their eBay activity. The application also features Buy It Now and PayPal payment integration. An eBay spokesperson, Ms. Jenny Thomas, said that Australian consumers increasingly wanted the convenience of shopping while on the move, and added that eBay mobile sales are growing faster in Australia than any other major market, with an item purchased through an eBay application every 15 seconds. Ms. Thomas also said that this latest Android application will help even more Australians to pick up a bargain. Apple says it has banned a Vietnamese software developer from its iTunes store for fraudulent activity. Apple said in a statement last week that developer Tat Nguyen and his applications were removed from the App Store for violating the developer program license agreement, including fraudulent purchase patterns. No further details about the incident were forthcoming from Apple, but the statement came after various reports on technology blogs that iTunes had been hit by a scam last weekend. According to popular technology blog Engadget.com, programs developed by the unknown Nguyen had at one point acquired 42 of the top 50 sales positions in the App Store's book category. Engadget said that it had received reports from a number of people that hundreds of dollars had been spent from their iTunes accounts to buy books from Nguyen's company. In its statement, Apple stressed that developers do not receive any iTunes confidential customer data when an application is downloaded, and advised users whose credit card or iTunes password is stolen and used on iTunes to contact their financial institution and to change their iTunes password. A study by the Philadelphia-based Pew Research Center has shown that electronic social networking could reduce friction between humans around the world, but that our real-life relationships could suffer and become more shallow. The study also found that the benefits of social media should far outweigh its negative impacts over the next 10 years. The research center surveyed nearly 900 experts, including scientists, business leaders and entrepreneurs, consultants, authors and technology developers. 85% of respondents said that the internet has mostly had a positive effect on their social world with respect to friendships, marriages, and other relationships. They say this is because email, social networks, and other online tools offer low-friction opportunities to create, enhance, and rediscover social ties that make a difference in people's lives. However, 14% said the internet had mostly had a negative impact on their social world and believed that this would only grow more true in the future. The survey's results were criticised by some industry experts. Gervais Markham, a Mozilla Foundation programmer, said that social networking encourages people to have a greater number of much shallower friendships. The results of the survey are available at the Pew Research website, pewresearch.org. And an experimental solar-powered aircraft launched on Wednesday last week has landed safely in Switzerland after a total flight time of 26 hours. The aim of the aircraft's manufacturer is to circle the globe using solar power to fuel the plane. The aircraft used super-efficient solar cells and batteries to stay airborne through the night. The four-engine plane has 12,000 solar cells on its wings and reached a height of nearly 9,000 metres, or 28,500 feet. The research team will now build a new, more advanced model of the plane and is aiming to circumnavigate the globe by 2013. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Finland makes broadband a legal right. Go Finland, I'm going
to
vote.
A legal right.
That's a trick answer to a straightforward question.
No,
what are you doing
Microsoft
to
Microsoft Office.
There's a great photograph of Kevin Rudd, the ex-Prime Minister, tickling a Zeppelin.
Tickling a Zeppelin? Is that a euphemism?
No.
Yeah, I imagine they're trying to sell
antivirus stuff.
Why would you do that?
That's a very good question.
Because the networks have done everything they could to delay and disrupt such technologies.
If you can't say in 128 characters,
it's not worth saying.
Think about it this way.
A reverse proxy hosted in the cloud.
Everybody's dying in here tonight. What's going
on?
Cough, gurgle. It is to think that the Minister for Broadband Communications, Digital Economy and Facebook listens to Tech Talk Radio.
Wouldn't do him any harm.
No.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here. An able panel in this evening, Dr. Ron, Dr. Graham and Dr. JD. I don't know, you're all doctors. Hello, everybody. How are we?
We're all doctors. We're going well, thank you. How are you, Andrew?
Good. I think we're better than last week with the croaks and things like that. We all were dying here, as we heard in your teaser just there before. So, yeah, I think we're all...
Everyone was coughing and spluttering and they're dying, going into respiratory arrest on me.
Absolutely. So, well done for pulling us through to the last bit of the 2 hours of the show that is Tech Talk Radio there, Dr. Ron.
And we've made it through another week. We're here now. That's the important thing.
Yeah, not much happened this week. I think we must be saving it all for next week for the announcement of the election and stuff like that, because apparently the governor... General, she's not going on her holiday.
No,
now.
She's hanging around.
She thought she'd hang around
under instruction.
I don't know. I think it's just under premonition, maybe.
Not.
But anyway, we'll talk a little bit about what has transpired politically this week in respect to technologically sort of speaking, because it is going to actually affect us a little bit with the filter and stuff like that. But
the big news this week is that the filter has been shelved for at least a year. It's not gone, but it's been put on the back burner, hasn't it?
Well, that's right. As I was sort of alluding to in the opening piece today, is that it's just one of these things that isn't going to go away. It was a 2007 election promise. I don't know whose baby it was. Was it Kev's? Was it Steve's or was it just the party generals? And anyway, it's here and it's going to be put on hold for at least until we get through this next election.
So the big question is this an election ploy just to make
softener.
It a non-issue for this election?
Absolutely. But hey, that's
or why. Or is it the first stage in, you know, you put it on the back burner, then you sort of forget to revive it a bit later on and then it's gone. So which of the two options is it?
I don't know. I think we might see a changing of the guard, not politically, but you know, it's in the maybe it might be Conroy's demise, if you know what I mean.
So,
but it may not be. It may not be. I'm purely speculating.
Might after the election, there might be a different communications minister who might have a different view.
Don't know. Hello to our friends up at the BDCDE, whoever they are,
and they F. Don't forget the F.
ABCDEF.
F for
the alphabet department. Oh, F for Facebook.
Yes.
Oh, dear. Anyway, so we'll talk a little bit about that this evening. Adam's talking about new high-tech vacuum cleaners. Yes, you're all speechless.
Excellent.
About that one.
I need a new high-tech vacuum cleaner.
Oh, do you?
Well, I've already got one.
Well, maybe you'll need to hear the view from the couch this week. It could be just what you want, JD.
Could be.
They promised everybody 30 or 40 years ago, look, come the year 2000, beyond 2000, we'd have vacuum cleaners that would drive around and vacuum the house themselves. They'd be...
They do exist.
They'd have artificial intelligence.
Smaller than we expected them to be.
They haven't arrived yet, though, but I'm looking forward to hear what Adam's got to say.
Austar also, they're first to market with streaming off-air TV and delayed viewing. Not that delayed viewing's anything new. The ABC have been doing it for ages, and along with a few others, but streaming of real-time stuff, I think, is quite interesting. Hopefully, we'll catch up with Luke Jerram tonight, who's the head of product at Hostworks, the people behind all that sort of stuff. So, it could be an interesting show this evening if our voices... Hang in there. If not, boys, I'll throw it over to Dr. Ron. Anyway, if you'd like to come and join us, as per normal, you're all welcome to come to chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Log in with other... there's a few in there this evening.
It's a full house. And good to see that Dr. Stryker there made the sensible decision and decided to stay in and listen to Tech Talk Radio. He was thinking about going out there for a while and having coffee and catching up with friends, I think. So he's made the right decision.
We'll do that after the show.
Yeah. Warlock, Smoked Salmon, GD's there, the moderator, Dr. Wrong, GC, Trent, Mikey, Ardy, Brad, JD, and Darren rest. In the UK, oh. And the rest, El Pal, yeah, everyone's
there. Come along and say good day and have a chat to us. And, yeah, it's good having our little community there each and every Monday night as we go live to air. Hello to all our listeners around the country, wherever you might be listening to us, from New South Wales all the way up to northern Queensland and across on the radio. And if not, the podcast.
And across the Tasman.
The Taswegians, yes.
And all the way around the world.
The Kiwis, yeah.
If you're not listening live, you can go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join in the chats there.
Should we talk about the soccer now?
The soccer. Well, it was a bit of a non-event, and I had an email exchange to this effect with Jeff Gates, who's a long-time listener and contributor, and he said that I like the soccer and said, well, it's a bit of a non-event, Jeff, for us. No Australian team involved, so was I going to set the alarm for 3 a.m. and get up and watch it? Nah, decided just to have a bit of a sleep in instead.
You were going
to
wait and hear it on
was
the...
Was there a soccer match of some kind?
There was, of some kind. It's called the World Cup, Graham. You may have heard of that in your travels.
I heard something about an octopus.
Yes, I heard about an octopus.
The octopus had it too, by the way. Picked everything. Highly, really high tech.
So how many in a row did the octopus pick?
All of them.
Yeah, but was it... How many?
About eight or something, wasn't eight? It? I could be wrong, and I'll probably be stand. I'm like your good self.
So the probability is, really what, highly. 1 in 2 eight. To the power of 8? 1 in 2 times 1 in 2 times 1 in 2 times 1 in 2, etc. 8 times.
Yeah, it's not really that unlikely.
It's not like 1 in a bajillion gazillion.
No, it's not. It's just 8 coin tosses coming down heads in a row. So
yeah, that's what it is.
That's all it is. It's nothing too remarkable.
Mm.
All right. Dr. Rom, do you have notable correspondence that needs to be tabled at this point in time before we get on to the rundown proper?
I do. I have nothing from an octopus, but I have an email from...
He didn't communicate that well. He just squashed and sat on perspex
boxes. He ate a muscle, didn't he?
Did they rig it? Is that how they did it? Did they put a muscle
in
the
box?
They put
a
muscle in each of 2 boxes with the flags on.
So he got a reward no matter what he did, yeah?
Yeah, it was just which one he opened and ate.
Did he always go to the other one first? Like, did he eat both, or did he only get one?
See if the grass is greener on the other side, so to speak.
Yeah. Sorry, Dr. Ron, we digress.
No, don't be disappointed. Don't be sorry. I'm just reading that Dr. Stryker is disappointed. He's a disappointed Dutchman today, he says, in the chat, because the Dutch lost, didn't they? That was sad. But well done, Spanish team.
Paul brackets octopus on Wikipedia.
Is he on Twitter? Is Paul the Octopus on Twitter, I wonder?
I don't know.
Octopus that tweets.
There might be a fake octopus account.
Social network.
Probably is.
GJMCN via email says, I was looking at Telstra's T-Box to get over a reception problem, hoping that the streaming TV would have all the free-to-air channels and or the catch-ups.
And they're flogging it at the moment, big time. Have you seen, what's his name, one of the boys light up singing? What's his name? Haddado.
Yeah, and there's Alexander Graham Bell's disembodied head.
No, that wasn't T-Box, was it?
That's T-Box.
Mm. Oh, see, that lost me, that one.
It lost me completely. It's meaningless. I don't know.
Anyway, T-Box is one of these things which is supposed to bridge the gap between the internet and your television.
Allegedly.
That sums it up, apparently. There's a lot of this going on at the moment.
GJMCN says, when you announced it was released, I went and looked and even got to the stage of ringing Telstra about it, had a good chat and found it wasn't a solution for me. But recently, whilst looking for a Linux distro, as you guys often say, but I really was, though, for an old twin-head laptop, he says, I came across the Australian Personal Computer, APC Linux site, and lo, a YouTube review of the T-Box, possibly by Telstra affiliate or viral marketer. Here, in shorthand, is the details, plus a couple of conclusions. He sent me a link there, and I'll pop that link in our show notes so you can watch the T-Box review on YouTube.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Good, bad, indifferent?
It was quite good. It looks like it has been professionally made and is made by a Telstra affiliate or a reseller of some sort. But it gives you a good overview of how it works.
Foxconn.
Is that who it is?
I don't know. They make all that sort
the
of
manufacturer,
stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. Might have been.
They make things for Apple too.
Well, it looks like a very nice user interface. I hadn't seen the UI before.
Does it look like the interface on the TV commercial? Or is that embellished somehow?
No, well, the interface on the TV commercial is just what's on the physical device, but they've got the device plugged into a nice big television screen.
Okay.
So, he says, twin tuner, but one play and one watch, not two record at the same time. Advertisers free-to-air, but more like TiVo Big Pond Universe, TV, music and movies. And access is unmonitored, but YouTube access is monitored content, says GJMCN.
Metered or monitored?
He says monitored. I don't know if he means metered or not. From the site, he says $299 outright to buy.
Oh, yeah.
It's an HD digital set-top box. It has dual DVB-T tuners, 200 gigabytes available for free-to-air recording.
So it's not streaming off air in, it's just pulling content in like movies.
Seems
over the
to
internet.
Be that's the case. Is an Ethernet internet connection, 802.11g or n for wireless connectivity.
Forget about that for HD.
Forget about for HD. And upscaling, quote, up to 920 by 1080, up and downscaling provides optimal screen presentation. Brackets, question mark, brackets, GJMCN says. So not really dual. He's disappointed that there are no, you can't record two programs at one time and playback. He's disappointed that there's no picture-in-picture feature and no catch-up connections.
I'm always wary of things that upscale. It's like buying a Blu-ray which has been authored in DVD and they've upscaled it. You know, when you go into the shop and you think, oh, I'm going to buy this TV series and it's on Blu-ray, but it was only actually ever shot on HD. On SD, and they've up-resed it to HD. Always scares me that.
But I've got an amplifier at home that upscales so that things like your old VHS videos get upscaled so they work on the big screen, which looks a bit fuzzy.
VHS.
But
yeah, I remember that.
Remember that?
I've got one somewhere, I think.
So those of us that have still got the old technology can still watch it on your new screen.
Excellent. Hmm.
There are series that have been shot on all sorts of strange formats and film formats and things like, enhanced 16mm and so on that, you know, they're higher definition than standard definition, but some places don't consider them full high definition. So the BBC won't accept 16mm as high definition, but some
don't
American
talk to me about
will.
The BBC. The BBC won't accept even high definition. HD cam, Sony's HD cam, they won't accept as high definition anymore.
So there's a lot of grey area to what's high def and what's not. And it depends on who you talk to. So
there's a level of colour space, which is what they accept. And standard HD cam is 311 in respect to its colour space and its compression, whereas they want 422, which is HD cam SR. It's quite expensive. Sony have it by the ghoulies, as Sony do. So, anyway, there's more than one flavour of HD.
Yeah, HD isn't always HD. No. Mm.
Sorry, Dr. Ron.
Don't be sorry. Ken, via email, says, hi guys, I've just discovered your show on the 3WBC website and iTunes.
Hi, Ken.
And wanted to pass on my compliments. Thanks, Ken. I work in telecommunications with Sierra Wireless.
They make cards.
Was previously with Ericsson, Telstra and iMate. I've heard of all of those people. He was previously with Ericsson and Telstra and iMate. And I've also been involved, says Ken, in community radio broadcasting since the early 90s, with Gippsland FM and Plenty Valley FM.
Oh, yes.
They're all areas and regions and places in Victoria. Many years ago, I used to listen to 3RRR's Bite Into It.
That's still on air,
isn't it?
It's
still on air. It's a very entertaining technology show if you've run out of tech talks to listen to. Must admit, I haven't tuned in for a long time, says Ken, and felt there was room for more shows like this on Melbourne Radio. Keep up the good work. Thanks for the feedback, Ken. That's great.
Yeah, it's excellent, isn't it?
Jeff Gates via email says, told you I was involved in a war of words with Jeffrey. So I saw on Guide that the World Cup was available in 3D. So I turned it on, and it was being broadcast in Crossview. What's Crossview, Andrew?
What's Crossview? That's a strange word, which I'm assuming translates to left and right.
Exactly. I think that's exactly what it is.
As opposed to over-under, it's what we call side-by-side.
Spot on. That's what we call side-by-side here. So I've had a look at the little image you sent me.
They call that the same thing at NAB in the United States too.
They call it side-by-side?
They call it side-by-side.
Okay. Jeff's calling it Crossview.
He's an audio guy.
Is
Hi, Jeff.
He pulled out his Crossview viewer to take a look. The viewer lines up the two pictures, one for one eye, one for the other. Many examples of this on YouTube, says Jeff. But because you are looking through the glass windows, you must be at least 3 metres away from your monitor to see properly. I must say, nothing spectacular. The long shots did not look 3D. The close-ups were pretty nice, but the best was when the FIFA graphic came across the screen. It was nicely 3D. Basically, I watched for 10 minutes and flipped back to 2D.
Now, this is a very interesting thing. I think 3D is going to be a bit of a fad, just quietly.
Mm.
It's a bit like we can at the moment because, yes, it is easy to do. Everyone's doing it, like especially the computer-generated films such as Avatar and some of the animated stories that are coming out these days. So why not do it? And, of course, I don't know.
Do you think it's going to be something like when colour was introduced and those families that used to turn the colour right up because they really wanted to appreciate the colour?
I bought a colour telly and I'm going to use it.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
Are we going to get over-the-top 3D effects?
Absolutely we will, yes.
We will for the short term, yeah. I went to the cinema on the weekend. I saw Toy Story 3 in 3D too.
And how was that?
Well, it was very good. It wasn't too over-the-top in 3D. And I could have watched it in 2D and felt no different about it, I would have thought. But no, it was nice in 3D. The thing that actually did sort of catch my eye was the commercials on before the film.
3D commercials?
They were in 3D.
Oh, great.
Now, there's a very nice promotion for a South Australian organisation that went across in front of me. And traditionally, 3D works... Well, it doesn't work on the long lens, which is probably what Jeff Gates was referring to, because it's way, way off in the distance. But what does work in 3D is when something is in the foreground and then you've got something in the background. So it gives you this sense of perception.
Depth.
Yeah. And that's what they've done to this commercial, which I saw. Everything tracks sort of like left to right and in front of some barrels or objects in front of you to sort of like give you that depth perception.
Mm.
And that's where it worked really well. So, yeah, Jeff's probably right, because if you think about what sport is, it's a long way away. So the level of 3D-ness is nothing flash. And the 3D stuff that I did see when I was in my recent United States trip was the stuff that looked great because the cameras were right up close to the players on the boundary lines and things like that. So that's where it really, really worked.
Is this a bit like when they introduced stereo on the TV and people had to think about what sounds they were going to put down the left and right channel so that it didn't just become a blur? Are we going to see the same thing, that people are going to change the way they direct movies and TV shows?
No.
To bring out those effects?
No, it's going to be byproduct. It'll all be done in post. If someone wants to add a bit of extra 3D, you can even separate it in some of the edit controllers that we use. You can sort of like...
artificially line things further apart.
Yeah. That's exactly right, Graham. So you can actually make it... Because if you think about what 3D is, it's stereo vision. You have two eyes in your head. You have different perceptions. Your brain works out, you know, what's further away. And this is exactly what the electronics does in the television. You actually move the cameras further apart, which gives it more spatial. And it can actually hurt to watch some of these things, which has been demonstrated to me that you hit the make it even wider stereo or 3D and people end up going, ouch, and taking their 3D
glasses. Your brain can't cope.
Exactly right. Exactly
but
right.
I think you're right too, Justin, in that people will shoot things intentionally to get that 3D effect. They'll frame shots with trees in the foreground or lamps in the foreground just to do the effect. I don't know if you've seen an old Hitchcock movie, Dial M for Murder, that was shot originally in 3D but usually shown in 2D these days. And you see it on TV every now and then. And, yeah, you find these shots all the way through it where there's a lamp sitting right between you and the person who's talking, and you think, well, why is he shot it like that? And it's not until you see it in 3D that you realise that that's why.
Mm. All right. Sorry, Dr. Ron, I'll apologise again.
Also,
we'll get through Coro before the end of the show.
We're nearly done. I said to Jeff after that last contribution, hey, how's the iPad? Because remember, he had that tagline at the bottom of his email last week. I said,
yes.
Sent from my new iPad. I said, how's the...
Has he got one yet? Sent from my iPhone OS 4
I said, how have you got yourself an iPhone 4 yet? I had the following reply. No iPhone yet. I am on a CDMA provider, Verizon. However, rumour is that they will be getting the iPhone in January. I would not own any AT&T stock. So it sounds like touched on a sore point there. But thank you for the contributions, Jeff and Ken and GJMC and everybody. So you can email us at feedback@techtalkradio.com.au if you'd like to correspond with the panel.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk filters, shall we? Mr. Stephen Conroy, the Minister for the Alphabetical Department.
BCDEF.
Yep, basically said he's going to introduce, he will delay the introduction of the mandatory ISP filtering until a proposal has... They're going to have a bit of a look at the RC classifications and work out where that list is coming from. Now, I would have thought you would have done that before you'd even got involved in doing filtering, wouldn't you? Like, you know, you got
particularly with their blacklist that got leaked.
Yeah. Check your sources. Where are we getting from? So, I sort of smell a rat here. I'm not 100% sure what they're doing up there in Canberra with the election.
Well, at least there is some talk about having some process in there to appeal decisions and so on.
Well,
there.
That was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, so they are taking some of the criticism on board.
If you find yourself on a blacklist because your service... like, let's say, for example, if they're blocking IPs, although I think I have seen Mr. Conroy in interview saying they blocked to the page.
They block individual URLs, he said, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you'd want to get it right, because if they start automating
things...
If he was
going to get it right, he wouldn't refer to URLs, which is an old name for something, but...
Mm. Anyway, Mr. Conroy said that the government would recommend a review of the RC guidelines to state and territory ministers following the consultations with the Home Affairs guy, who I wasn't familiar with, Mr. Brendan O'Connor. Anyway, apparently the states and territories are responsible for enforcing classification decisions, which I didn't know. I thought it was federal because I thought they had the OFLC.
For enforcing, that's why you can buy X material in some jurisdictions and not others.
Is that why you can get fireworks in Canberra and nowhere else?
Well, no, not fireworks. That's why
you used to be able to.
So while you're on your road trip, while you're on your road trip to buy your porn, you pick up your fireworks.
Oh, is that
as well.
What happens?
Yeah,
okay.
I see.
Okay. I love Canberra.
So yes,
no, but Graham's spot on. You buy X-rated material in Canberra, for example, but you can't buy it in other states.
Yes. Oh, okay. So, yes.
Not legally anyway.
So what happens if you order that stuff postally and it gets... It doesn't matter. It's where you buy it from. Nah, how can that be?
Yeah, it is. It's where you buy it from and you can postal order it,
but does
it
mean it's prohibited to own in a state where it's
no.
not?
No. It's no offence to own.
And that's where the state laws apply. So in Victoria, it's not an offence to own X-rated material, but it is an offence to sell it commercially.
Okay. I'm confused, but anyway, obviously these people who make these laws know better.
This is what but that's a state law, not a federal law, and that's exactly the point.
This is what Mr. Conroy had to say.
The aim of this review will be to examine the current scope of the existing RC classification, and in particular, whether it adequately reflects current community standards.
Well, is it the current community standards, or is it the current community attitude towards the filter that they're actually looking at? Or is this a way of disguising it? Because there's a lot of backlash with this filter. If you, like I think we mentioned on Tech Talk Radio 2 weeks back, I think when Julia Gillard announced the face of her new front bench, underneath that, where on the ABC blog, it wasn't about the front bench. There were hundreds of entries all about Conroy and his filter. So, I don't know.
Which is not unusual on an online forum that they're worried about online issues. I mean, that you sort of expect...
Yeah, I think that might be exactly a bias because of the media. I think if you did the same poll of just, you know, 774 listeners or something, yeah, you might get a different response.
But
if you ask talkback callers about it.
I don't remember anyone complaining about the classification system. It was just about the prospect of a filter that wasn't actually going to do anything useful.
Mm.
Correct. Ardwich on our chat saying, spin, spin, spin. I couldn't agree with you more, Ardwich. It is. It's getting to that point where you can't see the forest for the trees, I think. They're going to wear us down. It's a bit like ringing Telstra and asking for tech help. They'll wear you down after a while. Optus, Telstra and Primus, I believe, are three ISPs that are going to voluntarily filter material off the RC classifications list. And this is without being forced by the government or anything. No legislative requirement to do so.
No, they just said that they would be cooperative and take it upon themselves to do that.
Now, Optus's Director of Corporate Affairs, Maha Krishnapali, I think that's how you say
his
name.
It's a very good attempt, yeah.
It was a good attempt. That's good. This is what he had to say.
The filter process is one part of the solution. There is many, many peer-to-peer and virtual private network type traffic which will not be captured by this particular filter. So we work with the federal police to address all of those sorts of other issues to make sure we do what we can.
So but that's the reality of it, isn't it? Is that the peer-to-peer stuff and all the VPN stuff, which happens on corporate networks and things, is not going to be found. So... Mm.
No, he said many peer-to-peer or much peer-to-peer. It's, in fact, no peer-to-peer whatsoever.
Unless you can break it into it, which I don't think they can. It's all just IP-based traffic across their network.
Well, Senator Conroy said that it's not that the net filter is not going to apply to traffic other than that which uses the HTTP protocol, which is web-based traffic. So anything sent via email or anything sent peer-to-peer, anything sent via file transfer protocol, that's not going to be subject to the filter. It's not going to apply to that at all. The other thing that I very, very much hope for, and I haven't read anything about this yet, is that when Senator Conroy has a look at the existing classification system and they review it, I hope, really, really hope, that they look at the debacle at the moment with games.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, there's no standard.
That's a very
there.
Good point.
Right, but across the spectrum.
If he's serious about this, he needs to look at video games and he needs to have some degree of parity between the classification system that we apply to movies and books and films and what's happening at the moment with gamers.
Which is absolutely crazy. There is no, for those who don't know, there's no R rating for games. So a game that doesn't meet the M15 rating gets refused classification in Australia.
Oh, that's good. I was hoping that it doesn't fall into the M15 classification even if it's a restricted game.
Well, that's what happens, of course, is that, yeah, they try...
So stuff which should be R is actually M15.
Yeah, because they try to get it through because there's no R classification to use.
And either it gets
despite
the...
Despite the fact that the average age of the game-playing person in Australia is something like 30.
So what happens is it either gets an M rating inappropriately, or it doesn't get classified and it can't be sold in Australia.
It can't be sold in Australia and gets imported illegally over the internet or other methods. Hmm.
Do you remember what we had before the filter, the proposed filter? We haven't got it yet, but the proposed filter. The Howard government used to have a thing called the Net Alert.
Yes, that's right. That was the Liberal government's initiative.
The prior government to our current one,
which
when
was
we
a
had
website
changed.
Which had information about how to implement your own filtering on your own system, and they had a filter you could download and install
and
on
CDs
your own
and things,
on your own computer system at home. Yeah.
Well, a lot of industry, that is IT industry-based people, are questioning the Labor government's 2008 decision to axe the $84.8 million home internet filtering program, which was set up by the previous government. Launched in 2007 as part of the National Filter Scheme, the Net Alert program provided 15 free software packages for parents to block content from being displayed on their home computers. Now, the good thing about this was that it was filtering at the home level. It was filtering where mums and dads could sit down and watch what their kids were doing.
But the aim of this was completely different. The aim of filtering at home would be to exclude all kinds of material that Conroy's filter doesn't even go anywhere near. A filter system on your home computer would possibly exclude all pornographic material.
That's right. You could set the rating to whatever you wanted. And so if you had young kids, you could set it to M15 as the exclusion.
Mm. I think they should have stuck with it personally, because that brings it to the forefront of the dinner table at night. You can't look at that, you know, Jimmy or whatever, whoever it is in the family who's doing it. And it brings responsibility back to the parents rather than having this government take responsibility and not do the job properly. Because,
yep, and
as we've discussed on the show, the net filter is just... Anyway, we won't go there.
We will go there, because it's absolutely the heart of the matter, is that this is not a job that technology does well. This is a job for a human, supervising a child online. It's not a job for a machine. It's a job for a human, a parent or guardian or a teacher or someone like that.
Mm. Anyway, so yes, maybe Net Alert was just met its untimely demise. Maybe that is the solution.
Well, it had bad publicity, of course, at the time.
Yeah, but that was just one kid that managed to break it in such a period of time. But your average kid, my kids couldn't do that, and I think that's the target market that they were aiming for. Not so much the young 15-year-old whiz kid who's popping pimples in one hand and writing something, a Trojan in the other hand type sort of thing. So,
yes, while he knows the administrator password that his parents have set anyway, yeah.
Well, that's exactly right. And how many people... Yeah, that's another good point, actually. All the kids... Well, how many kids know their passwords as their parents' passwords? I just log on as me, you know?
Yeah, they're very good at watching the keyboard out of the corner of their eyes, a lot of these kids.
Speaking from experience, my 8-year-old daughter, I had to change the password on my iPhone the other day.
I was going to ask you, when you went to see Toy Story before, did you go by yourself, just sneak off, or did you take one of your... Did you take your young daughter with you, or...
No, I took the whole family.
Oh, your whole family?
There you go. Thank you for
asking. This is my problem. I don't have a kid to take. I need to borrow one to go and see a movie.
I've got a couple
that
you can borrow.
Oh, okay.
Just anytime, Graham. Just put your hand up and I'll lend you a couple. They're really good.
Sorry, Andrew. iPhone. You're talking about your...
I was. Graham made a good point. You know, how many kids watch out of the corner of the eye and put their own keylogging software onto computers to get...
Oh, they don't need keyloggers. They are experts at watching your fingers on
and
the keys.
And they'll continue to, because, yeah, certainly my 8-year-old now knows how to unlock one of our PDAs at home so he can change the TV channel.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Just remember what young Glenn did up the road.
Well, yes, how can we forget that? But that was just an extreme case of,
That was the other extreme, wasn't it? That was very funny.
It was a classic case of DNS poisoning. It was very, very clever.
It was young.
Now, there are people out there, dude, you have to explain yourself.
I will now, yes. A long-time friend of ours here had a teenage son, Glenn, and Glenn actually changed the DNS server settings and set up his own DNS at home.
The DNS changes names that we type, like www.techtalkradio.com.au, into the actual IP addresses, the numbers that are used by the computer underneath to find things on the web.
And he did this so that when his father went to look at the web usage stats for their family account, it actually said that, you've only used... a few gigabytes this month, and displayed a pre-canned...
He typed in the address of the usage page, but instead of going to the actual usage page, it went to his own mock-up of it with much lower numbers.
That's right, and he actually used the actual real Telstra usage page and did a divide by four or something like that.
Which is extremely clever.
So
is that how we did it? So it did actually change. It did actually change day to day.
Absolutely. Oh,
that's very clever. It did actually take Jeff quite a few weeks to discover that one.
He logged on at work and said, "What?"
dear, good one.
One of those great stories. Hey, before we go to the break, we've got View from the Couch coming up shortly, and hopefully we'll be chatting about Austar's new offering fairly shortly. Indigo Telecom launches in Australia. You're going, who the hell is Indigo Telecom?
Never heard of them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you might in the next little bit. They're targeting users outside the 3G coverage zones.
Oh, yes.
So they're apparently new. And they've launched with the aim of providing satellite, mobile, voice and data services to all of Australia's landmass. The Brisbane company owned and operated, a customer care facility and was looking to open new network operations centre within the next 6 months. Indigo claimed that its multi-billion dollar satellite telephony and terrestrial GSM network covered the entire Asia-Pacific region and extended satellite coverage to two-thirds of the planet's landmass and ocean mass. So they're not just targeting Australia. They've got plenty of landmass in their sights, I think, here.
There'd be a market for that, I reckon.
I reckon. Indigo estimated that there were more than 1 million Australians who couldn't access the 3G services or fell outside of the standard mobile coverage areas. I do, here in Melbourne. Did you know?
Yeah, 15 minutes out of the CBD.
Correct. I felt full out of 3G coverage at times. Yes, I can hear everyone saying, that wasn't Telstra either. So they're their target market. There's 617,000 people working in regional Australia, and they just don't have access to this sort of stuff. So maybe, here we go, another telco coming in to fill a gap. Maybe that's what we need. Time will tell, I guess. See how many customers and what offerings they have. So,
Indigotelecom.com.au is their website.
All right. You are listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron is here. Dr. Graham's here. And Dr. JD as well. Another interesting thing, just before we go to the break, Three, otherwise known as VHA, otherwise known as Vodafone.
Vodafone Hutchison Alliance.
Correct. Vodafone Hutchison Australia has increased the download quotas on its mobile broadband plans and slashed excess usage fees. This is the joys of a free market economy.
Mm-hmm.
Telstra also did this recently too. So maybe, you know, this is what you have to do to keep up with the game.
You do.
The telco announced a revised range of post-paid plans. The old entry-level 1 gig for $15 a month received an extra 500 meg. Wow. This is where it's all going at the moment. I know Telstra are becoming incredibly competitive with their next-gen marketing on their network, which is by far the best in Australia, and VHA doing the same. And don't forget, they're also offering free calls now between their whole network base in an effort to win customers across.
It used to be
across.
Three users to the other three users got free calls, but now they've extended that three to Vodafone and Vodafone to three and Vodafone to Vodafone. So, yeah. It becomes a good deal.
I've done tests on Three's mobile broadband.
Have you?
In respect to speed tests.
Oh,
and
yes.
Compared it to that of Telstra's. Can I just say you get what you pay for? And I'll leave it at that.
Right. I've been getting some very good speeds on Three the last, I don't know, a few weeks, month or so. I've been doing a test here and there.
Really? The best I can do is about 1.5 down.
That's what I've been getting, 1.2, yeah. 1.4, 1.5 down. I thought that wasn't too bad.
Yeah. To drop out at all?
Sound all that good to me.
No, what do you get on your Next G? What would be a normal sort of down speed?
On my very fancy Next G, does up to 20 something megabits per second USB modem elite card thing.
That's what the hardware will
do. That's what it's supposed. That's what it says on the box.
Yep.
Get 3 or 4, maybe. Yeah, somewhere
that's
around 3 or 4 meg.
3 meg or 4 meg.
Yeah,
it's not bad. That's what I've been getting too.
But what I found in
it should do a lot faster than that.
What I found in the workplace, though, is in real-world tests, particularly in crowds, you won't get any Telstra service because just about every other person in the crowd's using the same service.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Optus, but often Three will be clear and you'll get a much better signal and speed.
Good observation.
In a crowd.
Because no one's using it.
Because no one's using it.
Oh, there you go. Speaks volumes. Tech Talk Radio, back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio. Android-powered, flash-enabled devices. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, the thing might end up costing a little bit more, working a whole lot better, and being a whole lot more future-proof.
And there's an LED backlight as well.
There's a humdinger. Rip Schneider.
It's a Perlaterra.
Are they selling well on eBay?
Oh, yes.
Ah.
Not that type of guy.
You sound disappointed, Graham.
Entertaining.
Now, I'd like to introduce a conspiracy theory at this point in time because...
Oh, good.
Informative.
We've got another case here of a complete and utter lack of perspective.
Independent.
No, the couch is unbleepable.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable, you're right.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
One part of our show that we love each and every week is Adam's View from the Couch. Adam Turner writes for The Age, the Sydney Morning Herald, and a few other online and all sorts of other good things, actually. He's got plenty and he writes for lots of people. And one of the great things he does for us is he comes in here from time to time. Must get him in again one day, surely. We haven't had him for a while. But also, he sends us each week a lovely little audio file, which is whatever it is that he wants to get off his chest.
He sits back on his couch. He kicks back.
He does.
Kicks his shoes off, picks up his dozen remote controls. Presses some buttons at random and then he records a segment for us.
He does indeed. Yeah. And this week he's sort of trying to win brownie points, I think, with his better half. Right. And allegedly he sort of
domestic
says,
chores.
He says he does a bit of work around the house, being a work at home dad. But hey, you know, yes, I'm sure Alison would be a testament to that. But anyway, this week is no different. One of the new gadgets that's coming out, if it hasn't come out already, is... well, you've seen those robot things, haven't you, that walk around and do your pool? You know, those little robot suckery things that go in your pool?
Yes, our family friends have got one. They call it Herbie.
Herbie yeah.
goes...
Does
goes,
it work?
I think it does.
Walls and stuff
like that? Yeah, they have Herbie crawling around all the time, all year round, cleaning the pool.
Yeah.
That does a good job.
Well, apparently there's a Herbie equivalent coming for the living room near you. And that's what this week's View from the Couch is all about.
You have to ask yourself, do you need a robot vacuum cleaner? Details of Samsung's new Navibot robot vacuum cleaner just arrived in my inbox. I know it sounds like something out of the Jetsons, but I have to admit, I want one. Household chores are a contentious issue in my house, and as usual, I'm tempted to throw technology at a problem rather than get off my backside. As a work-at-home dad, I suspect I do more around the house than many guys, but there's still room for improvement all round. For the first time, I'm in a house with floorboards in the living areas, and they show up the dirt and the dust far more than carpet. A robot vacuum cleaner sounds awesome, something that could skirt around the house each morning before we get out of bed. These new Navibot ones can be programmed for different parts of your house. They know where to go, when not to go, what time to get up. You can block them off from certain rooms. They go back and charge themselves. You'd never even know it was in the house, except for the fact that when you looked around, all the dust and dirt would be gone. Still, the $800 price tag is a little daunting when you consider that it's doing a job that would only take one of us 5 or 10 minutes each day. Then again, I could say the same about our dishwasher, but I certainly consider that to be money well spent. We often forget how easy we have it these days, thanks to household time savers such as the dishwasher, washing machine, dryer, fridge, microwave, toaster, and vacuum cleaner, along with gadgets such as an electric kettle, beaters, and coffee grinder. Then you've got the ever-growing range of makers. A search of our kitchen reveals a pie maker, popcorn maker, jaffle maker, bread maker, ice cream maker, and a few other specialist gadgets. Of course, we completely take for granted utilities such as electricity, gas, running water, and sewerage. No one would consider me lazy for owning these gadgets or paying for these utilities, so why draw the line at a robot vacuum cleaner? I think it's partly public perception. Perhaps the first people to get running water were considered lazy. Perhaps the first people with electricity or a dishwasher were considered lazy sods. Few people would think less of you today for spending good money on such things. Even in 2010, a robot vacuum cleaner still sounds a little decadent, but perhaps that will change with time. If you're time poor or just money rich, then a robot vacuum cleaner might make sense, but if you're just lazy, then Samsung's Navibot might not be the sanitation panacea that you're hoping for. It might deal with dust bunnies, but it's not going to tidy up the kids' toys, put away the junk on the kitchen bench, clear off the coffee table, pick up your dirty socks, make the beds, empty the bin, clean the toilet bowl, run a load of washing, and deal with mysterious smells in the kitchen. Throwing technology at a problem won't necessarily help if bigger issues need to be addressed.
Even so, I have to admit that I'm still tempted by the concept of a robot vacuum cleaner. I might get a review unit and see if I fall in love with it.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hey, I want one that does clean the toilet bowl and does pick up my socks. And,
yeah, now...
Wouldn't that be good?
Weren't we supposed to have walking robots that had arms and legs and could use all the existing gadgets so you didn't have to have a special robot vacuum cleaner that only cleaned the floors? Yes, we're supposed to have actual robots that could use the existing vacuum cleaner to clean the walls and then use the existing toilet brush to clean the toilet and the existing, you know, dishcloth to wash the dishes and all
like
that
George
sort of
Jetson.
Stuff. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry?
That was very important.
It was a George Jetson type sort of thing, really, wasn't it? Anyway, so thank you, Adam. That was very interesting. That was the view from the couch. Now, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back, hopefully, or we will be talking to, all things going according to plan, Luke Durham, who's going to tell us all about what's going on with, I guess, the new offering from Austar. So we'll take a break and we'll be back in just a moment.
Tech Talk Radio.
Google have been taken to court for forgery.
eBay was the truck and then Telstra pulled the license.
I need my fix of current Tech Talk Radio.
There's some suggestions they're all going to have SD card slots in them.
There's a new way of watching television that we're seeing emerge.
I can't give you that information over the phone.
Well, if you don't like it, then don't display the sidebar.
When I had a merchant account with the Communist Bank, the material that was the what?
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show. Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here. Dr. Ron.
JD, yeah, present. Here I am.
Graham. And another relaxing evening here in front of the radio. Thank you for your company this evening, wherever you might be around Australia. Don't forget to come along and join us on the chat, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. And so, peace. Still lots of people there.
Yes, they're talking about couches, Brazilians, and skinless
cats. Oh, dear.
Oh, dear.
Cats.
I don't know what they do in there, but anyway.
They have their own little program.
They're obviously, yes, it is. It's its own culture in there, isn't it?
Yes. They want an iRobot to clean their couches. That's the
story. Is that what it
is?
Is
that what they're talking about?
Okay, that's what they're talking about, cats and
cat hair.
Hairless cats, yes.
Adam Turner's view. And what was someone said something about just pay someone to do it for you? Well,
just pay $18 an hour and get a human involved.
That's an option. Anyway, during the course of the week, new things are happening in the delivery of content to our living room because that's what it's all about these days. Obviously, we spoke, I think, in previous weeks about what Sony are doing with delivering movies and things like that. And we're all familiar with ABC's iView and stuff like that. But Austar are now actually getting in on the game too, and they're delivering it's delayed movies and things like that, the content that's been on their system as well, as well as, I believe, live streaming. And joining us in the Tech Talk Radio studio this evening on the telephone, hopefully we have Luke Durham, who is the technical director with Switch Media, and one of his colleagues there, who is Adrian Britton, who's involved with Hostworks, the people behind the technology that do all this sort of thing. So, technology working for us here this evening. Good evening, gentlemen. And I guess, Luke, if we can start with you, what's going on? What have you launched?
Sure. Well, last Thursday, we launched a catch-up TV service for Austar. And Austar, a pay TV company, focused mainly on regional Australia. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are aware of them. They've launched a service which allows you to stream and download TV programs, movies, and these are programs that have already been broadcast, but it gives you the convenience of being able to view them. So we're Switch Media. We're approached to facilitate, design, build, and also operate this service for them. And they saw us as a way of, leveraging our experience in this space. So to give you a bit of a background on what we do at Switch Media is we're a company that allows other, that enables online video for our clients. We've assisted the ABC with their iView in order to streamline the flow of content, getting it up on the service fast, handling the volumes. you know, for other clients like Fairfax and things like that. So over the last five years or so, we've really had our teeth stuck into this online space, and you know, they're very exciting times.
Luke, it is very exciting times, and I guess there's a lot of new technology that's rolling out, and of course we've seen a lot of, I know, flash related issues and things like that to compound things as well. But can you tell us, you said you had something to do with iView, what's the difference between Austar's new offering and what iView offer? Because most of our listeners in the city centric areas would probably be very familiar with iView.
Sure. Yeah, iView is a flash based platform, and it's the same with Austar's Anywhere product. I guess the key differences is, firstly, the download component. We at Switch Media have spent a lot of time over the last sort of 6 to 9 months really giving Adobe's latest product a workout. You know, we've been in beta testing for a while, and just a few weeks ago, Adobe released their product called Flash Access 2. That's a digital rights management, which is really designed to go head-to-head with Windows digital rights management. But the key difference there is it works on Macs and Linux and really gives you the choice of what platform you want to use to view this content.
That was a bit of a turning point for Adobe, wasn't it? Because traditionally they were not into digital rights management, but I believe, and I can stand corrected, this was their first foray into this sort of media for rights management, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, arguably it's their first usable foray. They did have Adobe has a rights management system around their PDF products, which they applied to video, and it was obvious it wasn't quite there. They never really got much leverage with it, but that made them really get their heads down, figure out what this space needs, and the acquisition of Macromedia, and those engineers, they really came up with a great product.
All right, so let's talk about your product. Download and watch at your own convenience, anything that's been through the Austar pipes. Is that the offering at the moment?
Essentially, it still comes down to the content that the studios want to have available on the download service. But it's at the moment it's 35 channels, about 400 to 500 hours of content a month. So when you compare that to iView, it's, you know, perhaps maybe 30% more content available.
And what about its longevity? Does it is the same sort of thing to a couple of weeks or something?
Well, it can range from a couple of weeks to a couple of months, even to 12 months. So it really comes down to the series, the program, the series, and what the studios are allowing.
But the critical thing is you can download it. You don't have to watch it online in real time. Like the ABC's iView only works for people with really fast internet connections. But this bypasses that by allowing you to download. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. And this is essentially their key strategy. Like a lot of their subscribers aren't in the capital cities. There's, you know, their internet links are a little bit dubious, and so this allows them to still access the service, and then also offer higher resolution, higher bit rate versions to a broader audience.
Yeah, you were going to say the quality. Is it obviously sounds like it's a little bit better than what iView have on offer? Is that right?
Yes, that's right. The highest quality format is currently 1.5 megabits a second, but then that scales down to the lower quality streaming, which is just under 500 kilobits.
So how does that compare with what we're used to in terms of standard definition television or high definition television, or where does that fit into that scale?
I guess it depends largely on what channels you're watching. The high rate versions equivalent to, say, your ABC One, sort of Channel 7, you know, your Premier standard definition. But then, you know, channels like ABC 2, SBS 2, they're at lower bit rates and the quality suffers. And so that's more like the kind of even the 500 kilobits, the, you know, 700 kilobits a second streaming service.
One of our listeners on the chat has just sort of said, so this is sort of like Hulu for Oz. Is that how you describe it?
Yeah, to a point. It's not a all-encompassing service where all the studios are getting involved. This is Austar's product. It's part of Austar's long-term strategy to be a to really be a centralised point in people's living rooms, as they've been for years.
All right. Now, regional people are traditionally not as lucky as some of our city slickers when it comes to high-speed broadband and data and things like that. Does the content scale based on the delivery platform, or should I say the delivery pipes?
Well, we do have some adaptive streaming in there, but you know, at the moment we've kept things pretty simple. But the view is to trial a few different mechanisms, get some feedback from their users, and to see what the uptake's like.
All right, let's just talk to Adrian Britton, who is the head of tech for Hostworks. Obviously, you guys are hosting all this technology, I assume locally here in Australia, Adrian?
Yeah, that's right, Andrew. We operate out of Australia-based data centres, both in South Australia and New South Wales are our primary instances.
So how do you go if a lot of people request a lot of media simultaneously? Do you like have caches around the place through other hosting services and things like that? Or is it because the iView stuff's traditionally pretty flawless? I'm assuming that this is too.
Oh, I hope not. It's obviously very early days in AllStar Anywhere as a product evolution goes. You know, Hostworks has been delivering the iView service for the unmetered aspect of the iView service now for a good long period of time. You know, it's typically a bit of the constraint of internet bandwidth within Australia. Hostworks has got more internet bandwidth than, you know, you can poke a stick at. The pipes around Australia, however, can often be the constraining factor when it comes to latency critical media such as video. But to answer your question, yes, we do use caching technology. We've spent a large amount of money in deploying a content delivery network, which you know, we're starting to market heavily, and you know, we're hopefully setting up for doing items such as AllStar Anywhere and other future projects into the future.
So this is obviously a fairly new platform, I guess, or a fairly exciting platform too, because it's not just restricted to broadcasters. Like, a lot of people could be getting into this. Are you guys scaling up for, I guess, a fairly rosy future?
Well, Hostworks has come from a fairly strong track record of online and digital media delivery. We've been running the brand known as 9MSN now for, since its inception, which has been running now, I think, for over 10 years. You know, we're very pleased to be working with the 9MSN guys and extending our relationship into the future, which has newly been announced. So, yeah, when it comes to growth, we're always on a growth curve. I mean, I think you have to be with any kind of technology adoption. You know, certainly, as Luke said, there's some very, very exciting novel technology that's been implemented as part of AllStar Anywhere. The rights management component is particularly of interest to both ourselves, Switch, and obviously AllStar, and how that enables the catch-up TV portals for the future is certainly front of our mind.
I guess if you look at technology as it evolves, you look at animation houses when they make 3D animations and things like that, they learn from the previous computer rendering software that they had, and they have wish lists that they want to embellish upon for the next one. What have you learned out of some of the previous examples that you've done? Is the new, delivery of AllStar any different in respect to the technology that you're using? Obviously, the flash is, but in respect to storage and serving this sort of content, is it any different?
I guess what we find is changing is the life cycle of these programs are increasing. So the on-demand storage is becoming more and more critical. You know, being able to drag a program out of an archive, you know, like off a server, but in a responsive time is quite critical. But the, you know, the future, what we're really excited about at Switch Media is just the variety of different devices and different ways to consume a lot of this video is really becoming exciting. It's it's really consumer driven. The consumer wants to watch what they want to watch.
Absolutely.
When they want to watch it, and if it's convenient, they're prepared to pay for it. And so all this technology is, you know, working towards that, you know, the golden, you know, the killer application. But you know, there's going to be a bumpy road. What the end result is I guess that fight still has to be fought.
Luke, if I'm an existing customer, what do I need to do to take advantage of the new Austar Anywhere?
You just have to go to the Austar website. I think if you already have a login on there, on their website, if you manage your account that way, then that login will let you access the service. That said, if you aren't a subscriber, you can still browse the content and get a feel for what's on the service without actually viewing the programs.
Is there an option for us to subscribe just to the digital service and not to the to the live broadcast?
Not as yet.
Is that on the cards?
To be honest, I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
If I knew.
Because it sounds like a very, I guess, promising sort of service. I can just speak from our household personally, Luke, is that our bandwidth consumption, fortunately we're on an unmetered iView channel, is currently sitting at around 2 gig a day by the time the kids watch all their ABC3 stuff again. So I guess as people become accustomed to this technology, they're going to use it more and more and not rely on free-to-air television and PVRs. They'll be able to come in, as I do and as our family does, and just watch it when we want to watch it. And I think that's the exciting part about this.
Yeah, definitely. And what the long term plan is to have these sort of services just seamlessly integrated with your TV. You know, you don't have to install all these different boxes and have hundreds of remotes. It's you can just get on there and access it. And so the guys at Switch Media are constantly reviewing the products that are out there and trying to figure out, is this the right one? What could be done to improve it? As I said, we're all very excited.
I guess one other thing too is iView is free on certain ISPs. Is there a similar deal with Austar and delivering of content over ISPs? Is anyone doing a nice job?
I think that is definitely on the cards. But naturally, Adrian is more up to date with this sort of thing.
Andrew, do you think it's something that people want?
Oh, well, I think it's certainly part of what people would decide an ISP with. I know I would at the moment, if based on the fact that if I'm consuming 2 gig a day in bandwidth, obviously that's a fairly sizable chunk, and that's the way we're tending to go. So potentially I think it would be a buying criteria, definitely.
A buying criteria for the ISP?
For the ISP, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And one feature we do have in the Anywhere service is the ability to track your usage based on that entire account, so you'll be able to see what users have viewed or how much they've viewed over the last month or three months while unmetering is a viable option for a good chunk of Australia, but I guess in a lot of the regional areas they don't really have much option. They're really stuck with Big Pond.
Yes, well, we've discussed that on numerous occasions on the show. I guess the NBN, what do you think of the NBN, Adrian, just briefly? Is this opening up a whole new world of possibilities for you too in regional areas?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an evolving journey. I'm not sure that any of us have a crystal clear view as to what it brings, but from a hostworth perspective and our ability to deliver content, I think it's an opportunity. As I said earlier in the call, one of the things that tends to hold us back at the moment is the consumer's ability to consume on sensible sized internet pipes. Hopefully, if the NBN levels that playing field a little bit, we'll be in a better situation to deliver more compelling content to more consumers and keep our customers ultimately happier.
All right, we're talking to Adrian Britton there, who is the head of tech for Hostworks, as well as Luke Durham, who's also the technical director of Switch Media. I guess just as we wrap up tonight, Adrian, peer-to-peer file sharing has always been the last resort for a lot of people who get frustrated over television station antics and things like this. The delivery platforms that are on offer here right across the board is certainly going to alleviate those sort of things in the market. So I guess my question to you is the uptake, how much are you expecting or the demand for this new service? Are you expecting a large demand to start off with, or are you expecting sort of like a gradual uptake of this new technology?
I think with everything, it's proportional to the amount of marketing effort and energy that that Austar put into the product. I might actually cross to Luke, who's probably a little bit closer to see this.
Yeah, the Austar see this as a part of their long-term strategy. Their ultimate plan is to, be in the living room and keep people there. And the so they're reviewing their set-top boxes and how to integrate this with the linear TV programming as well. So the NBN is, you know, does form a major part of that, being that they do focus on regional Australia. But you know, there's no guarantees with the NBN, and this is addressing what the consumer wants. There is some interest in it, and at the end of the day, people are using it and they love it, and a lot of people know what the iView is and enjoy it and get a lot of value out of it. So they are expecting that the download offering gives a little bit more freedom, that people can download a program onto their laptops, load it up with some cartoons, go on that road trip, and then the kids can play back this stuff offline.
Will there need to be a special application or program that you'll need to download to view it on, or will it all be done in a web browser?
There's an Adobe Air application. Not sure how many of you are familiar with that, but
it's a free download, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit like your Flash plugin, but it's an installable application. So it's essentially the same kind of web experience, the flashy web experience, but as a desktop application, and that also runs on Mac and Linux.
And with the downloaded content, is that basically only viewable on the computer? Or if you've got a network that's connected to something like a PlayStation 3 or a WDTV Live that's plugged into your big screen, can you play stuff back through that?
At this stage, no.
Okay, so it's purely on the computer.
Thing. Yeah.
It's on the computer. So you've got to have the computer hooked up to your big screen.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, there you go, gentlemen. I think that is the new offerings from Austar. Thank you very much, Adrian, and thank you very much to Luke for joining us this evening on Tech Talk Radio and telling us all about Austar. We wish you all the best of luck with that. It sounds very promising, and I think there's only more of this to come.
Definitely the future of television, isn't it?
Absolutely. So watch this space. I think it's just going to only get bigger. Thanks a lot, gentlemen, for your time this evening.
Thank you.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We'll be back with more in a moment.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
A lot of our listeners in regional Australia probably be very interested that Austar's doing that now, especially our Cairns listeners and the likes, and the Wee Warriors in New South Wales.
There might be those people using Austar to watch their normal television, and now this is a new service that's available to them as well.
Ah, it's the way of the future.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
Yeah, it's interesting how all these different... I mean, everybody seems to have a different take on the catch-up service. There's the 7 and 9 have got their things, and there's ABC iView, which has been very good. But they've all got a slightly different philosophy on how it's going to work. So it's very interesting. We're watching television change. We're watching television change from what it was into what it's going to be in the future, and it's fascinating to see the different options as they come up.
5 years down the time, be very interesting. You look what the ABC's doing. They're dropping their high definition channel to give us allegedly high definition news.
High def news. That's odd, isn't it?
No.
Odd's not the word.
It's just HD news just don't go together. But hey, we'll wait and see what comes out.
Yeah, because I mean, half the stuff that's broadcast in news, the actual
back of a handycam,
phone, it's not even standard def anymore. You know, it comes in all sorts of strange formats and gets standards converted 57 times. And yeah,
you take the 3GP file that you start with, and then you
up res it, up convert it.
Yeah.
Oh, sounding ugly now. Dr. Ron, you're saying there was an eBay issue that's going around at the moment. Too bit of a scam for listeners to keep an ear out for?
There is. I'd just like to spend a couple of minutes talking about this. In my professional capacity as a Dr. Ron during the week, I had the unfortunate experience of dealing with somebody who was dealing with somebody, and I'm going to call him Phil for the purposes of the exercise.
Do you deal with
Phil.
Dealers?
This is Lucky Phil.
Thank you, Graham. That's what I was hoping you would say. look, it's an eBay scam that's going around, and I suppose that more tech-savvy people take a lot of this for granted, but there are people who aren't as tech-savvy as the panelists here and the people who are listening, our audience, all of you guys out there. What happened to this poor man was that he was looking to buy a car. He went to the popular online car auction site, carsales.com.au.
You saw an advertisement for a car there, and it was advertised for about $12,500. It was a brand new car, and they had the location, and it had the photographs and the registration of the car and the make and the model and the engine number and everything listed. And he emailed them, and he said, "This looks almost too good to be true." That was the first warning sign.
Yes.
Whenever you find yourself saying those words.
Yes, have a really good think of
it.
You're right, JD.
It's like you get emails from eBay Motors.
Well, well, look, he sent an email to the seller, and the seller said, "I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm going to go and I'll list it on eBay straight away with a buy it now link." So you click on the link on the button, and you can buy it now, put your bid in and everything else, and you'll get it.
Yep.
The reason why I'm selling it so cheap is that I'm in the military and I'm going overseas at very short notice. It's a shame to see the car going so cheap, but I need a fast sale.
Yeah,
so
nothing like a good backstory to support your scams.
Exactly, yep. Graham. So if you need it, you have to act fast. It's what salespeople call a compelling event.
How close was he to the car? Was he like same suburb,
He was in Victoria. The car was being offered for sale, allegedly in Tasmania.
Well, it wasn't too far.
Not too far, but far enough away so that you're not going to go and visit it. So he got emailed a link from this person, and I saw a copy of the email, and the email had the email link, and it looked a bit like this: www.ebay.com.au.carsalesserver.something.dodgy.co.cn. And he looked at the first right.
The,
he looked at the first.
.cn's the giveaway.
He looked
at
the first part of the address, and he saw www.ebay.com.au, and he thought, "Well, that's safe. It's an eBay link." And he clicked on the link. It came up with an eBay page with a buy it now link. He clicked on buy it now. But then warning flag number two, he thought, "This is all happening a bit fast. I haven't actually seen the car. How do I know it's legitimate?" Well, he rang Vic Roads or whatever it was.
Taz Roads, whatever.
Yeah. And they referred him to a website and said, "Look, punch in the registration details here. Check to make sure that the make and model and colour all match up and that it's legitimate." He did this and it was legitimate. From the point of view of the roads agency, where he made the inquiry. Then he said to the seller, "How do I know? I'm a little bit concerned still. How do I know that this is legitimate?" They said, "Look, we'll get someone to contact you, or why don't you go to this link here, click on this link, and it's the eBay buyer protection page. And all you do is put in the transaction ID, which is this ID, and they'll verify that it's legitimate for you." So we got another email, and this went to a domain name called buyerprotection.biz. Which is used by fraudsters. And it started out as, again, www.ebay.com.au.something.something.buyerprotection.biz. He went there, he put in the transaction ID, it came back and said, "Yes, this is a legitimate transaction. Yes, you'll be protected under our buyer protection scheme. No problems at all." Third thing that should have rung alarm bells is that the seller said, "Look, because I'm going overseas fast, I've shut down all my bank accounts. The only way you can pay for this is via..." Graham, you know
Western
it.
Union. United, yeah.
Well done,
yeah.
Western Union.
Western Union, yeah.
Exactly. He thought, okay, fair enough. He went to the bank. He withdrew $12,500 in cold hard cash. He walked next door to the post office into Western Union. He wired $12,500 to
last he ever saw
someone called John Smith, and that's the last he saw of it. Last he heard of his money. He's never seen the car. The emails all stopped and everything else. He went to the police, and the police said, "I'm sorry, I think you've done your dough."
Yeah.
He showed the police all the emails, and they looked at the domain names, and they said, "No, look, this is how you read domain names, from right to left, not left to right."
Yeah.
This is something we should talk about in detail at some point.
We really
how
need to.
How to read a web address,
Well, why don't you touch on it? You've touched on it now briefly, then, Dr. Graham, why don't you have a quick bash, if it's...
Well,
quick.
Okay, this is important. You have a look. There's several components. There's a... what's called a protocol at the start, which is often HTTP or HTTPS. The S means secure, SSL. Then a colon slash slash. And then there's what's called a domain name. So it might be www.ebay.com.au.
Or it could be without the
and
triple
then
w.
There'll be another slash. Well, it could be anything. The point is it's between the double slash and the next slash after that. That's the domain name. Now... so far, we've been reading from left to right, but just that domain name, that part in between the double slash and the first slash that comes after that, that you've got to read that from right to left in groups of between the dots. So you start at the far right-hand end with a .au, so you know it's an Australian domain name. Then you go back a step, and it might be a .com.au, so you know it's a commercial Australian domain name. They needed to provide their ABN to get that. and then you go back, and that's and the next one across is the domain that belongs to the company, and the next one across starts to become internal things within that company. So www is usually their web server, but they might have other domains like help dot or something like that. So you might have help.ebay.com.au.
Like we do, chat.techtalkradio.com.
That's a good example. Chat.techtalkradio.com.au is our chat site.
Got rid of the W's?
But by reading it from right to left, by starting at the au.com, Tech Talk Radio, you know it's a Tech Talk Radio one.
Yep.
Whereas if it said chat.techtalkradio.com.au.somethingelse.biz.
Yeah, Ardwich on our chat says, you know,
you'd start to realise that, in fact, although the left-hand half looks right, you've got to start reading at the right-hand end, and the actual owner of that domain is the somethingelse.biz. That's the guy that owns the domain.
It's funny, if you actually look at those dodgy emails you get, because 9 times out of 10, they end up in your junk mail folder, and it reveals all the links
and
in your junk mail folder.
If you have a look at how that works, you can start to understand some of the tricks. So it's a good exercise to do. Don't click on the links.
No, but
just hover your mouse over them and have a look in your status bar underneath to see, you know, it might say it goes to www.ebay.com.au, but when you hover your mouse over it, you see that it actually goes to one of these links that we're talking about that confuses the issue.
The displayed text can be different to the link text.
That's another thing, yes. Mm. Yes.
And the nasty people tend to make websites look exactly like the bank you bank with or exactly like the eBay page you're expecting.
And that's where you've got to learn to have a close look at what's in that address bar. And in the case of online banking, of course, you should always type the address yourself and never click on a link to go to your online banking. But, in the case of things like this, if you read that bit between the double slash and the next slash, and you understand how to read it, but, you know, dot by dot from right to left, then you'll start to realise when you're being tricked.
In the case of the photograph of the car and the description, the make, the model, the engine number, all the scammers have done is copied a legitimate advertisement. Mm. So, of course, when Lucky Phil went to the agency to clarify, was that registration actually, does it marry up with that make and model car? They said, yeah, it does. And that actually had nothing to do with the people who were,
yeah,
were ripping him off.
Yeah, so someone's random car that they'd chosen, yeah.
Correct. I've just made half a dozen pointers here for how to avoid things like this happening, but we've covered off most of them. Learn how to read internet addresses. Never, ever use Western Union to transfer money on eBay. eBay strongly recommend that you don't use Western Union.
And when you go to Western Union, you have to sign a form saying that I agree that this money is going to John Smith no matter who he happens to be.
That's right, and there's a big disclaimer on the Western Union form. It says, do not use our service for eBay. Use a current web browser that offers some protection from phishing scams. The current web browsers will often alert you to the fact that this website may not be what it is you're expecting it to be.
So that means Internet Explorer 8, it means Firefox 3.2, I think we're up to. And make sure you click on Go to Help and check for updates in Firefox and get the latest version.
Something which Graham also mentioned, I think, type the addresses directly into your web browser yourself. Don't click on links in email. So if you want to go to eBay, type in ebay.com.au and hit enter. Don't trust a link in an email. Don't click on an image in an email. That's worse. Like Justin was saying, that can mask the actual address that you're going to.
Even the text, even in text mode in an email, they can mask the actual address. They can show you one address and the link actually takes you to another.
And last but not least, don't buy expensive stuff if you haven't seen it in real life. If you're spending $5 or $10 on a replacement battery for your mobile phone, then if you're going to blow $10, you'll blow $10. But for goodness sake, you know, $12,500, it's a lot of money, isn't it?
So yeah, eBay you can traditionally tell by the number of sales they've had, you know.
Oh, there's a whole lot of other rules around buying off eBay that I certainly follow because my collection largely comes from eBay.
Yeah.
And one is if it sounds too good to be true, then I want to pay cash and I want to go and pick it up myself.
Good point to that one.
Otherwise, I want lots and lots of feedback. Don't mind a couple of negatives because usually there's some personality issues in there. You know, not everyone gets along and that's okay. But lots and lots of positive feedback from the seller. And you want to know that they've been selling this sort of stuff before because another thing that can happen is accounts on eBay can be hijacked. So if this person sold nothing but clothing and suddenly they're selling a $5,000 computer, you've got to wonder, well, why they changed their pattern of selling. And if they can give you a good excuse and it seems legitimate, then you might start believing them. But there's a whole lot of things to look for even in buying off eBay legitimately.
But of course, none of that will help you if you actually think you're on eBay, but you're not. So you've got to follow all the other rules first.
The other thing that Warlock says in the chat room, very valid, that someone could steal a legitimate bestseller account. So you could, again, you could have an account there with an excellent feedback rating with 1,200 positive responses, but someone's hijacked their account and is suddenly using it.
And that's
account.
Where you look for those clues, like Justin was saying, that they've always sold one thing and now they're selling something quite different.
Set yourself a limit. And if you're buying a car and it was just down the road in Tassie, you'd just fly over, wouldn't you, for the sake of $45 cheap. And... Yeah. Do a one-way to drive it back on the boat. Anyway,
just remember.
Sorry, Lucky Phil.
If it seems too good to be true, it probably is.
Oddspot gadget, the website of the week's coming up. Dr. Ron, is the Oddspot that the website you emailed me, is that the same one that you've got on tonight? Or am I going to be sadly disappointed?
Look, I'm almost certain it will be a different one. But what did I email you? It was something funny and perverse, wasn't it?
It did the rounds of the office. It was very funny.
Was it?
Before we go, this is the manic 30
seconds.
Will
we put
seconds.
It in the show notes?
Oh, well, if you want to. Your reputation at stake here.
I'm trying to remember what it was now.
About washing a VW car. I think it seemed to...
Oh, no, it's not that one. No,
okay,
no.
Good.
Yes, I think Warlock sent me that one, actually. Yes,
was that where it came
three
from?
Young Warlock ladies in a car wash, and you could type in commands and get them to do things.
Oddspot Gadget website of the week, as we say, coming up very shortly. Stay tuned for that one. Dr. Ron traditionally has a perler, but you'll have to communicate with him. And don't click the links in his emails. He's a shocker like that. just news briefly, China confirms a renewal of Google's license, funnily about that. So Google.cn looks like it's going to have a little bit of a reprieve. But because I think at the moment, the current one just reroutes itself to the Hong Kong.
Google.hong, the Hong Kong one. Yeah, yes, oddly enough, Google have learned that in order to do business in China, you have to follow the government's rules.
Funny about that. Google also has been found in breach of Australia's Privacy Commission rules and things like that.
Oh, and this is ridiculous.
This is getting a bit out of control because now they're threatening to actually take action against Australian Google employees.
Saying that Google, this is the Google collected Wi-Fi data while they were driving around doing Street View.
Yep.
And that's like suing somebody for listening to your stereo because you had it turned up too loud. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Okay, Pirate Bay, remember those guys? They've gone the way of all these sort of things.
The Dodo?
Yeah, they have actually. A Dodo's a good description.
They're going strong, are they?
No. The guys,
the ISP?
The guys who started it. Now, we're talking about Pirate Bay.
Yeah.
The people who, the BitTorrent people that started all that. Well, you remember how they had a problem? They got hauled through the courts and stuff like that. They didn't host the content. They just put the links to the content and stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, those two guys have decided to say that time's up and we've served our purpose here and we're moving on. But their user details have been hacked by other people. So if you're a member of Pirate Bay in a past life, chances are your details are now known by some hackers. Also this week, the Department of Broadband and Communications and the Digital Economy.
And Facebook.
Sorry, I left Facebook off the end. The DBCDEF.
Yep.
They're now on Twitter. So
as well.
Yeah. They're in the Twitterverse along with Julia Gillard. So watch out. There must be an election coming.
I'll have to follow them. What is their...
I'll have a guess.
BCDEF.
That's the one.
BCDEF, is it?
Yeah. So, yes, the other interesting news, the Apple Store turns 2 years old.
iTunes.
iTunes too, probably. It's all part and parcel of the same thing, isn't it? But, Apple's App Store turns 2 years old. That's...
Apple Store in China as well.
Really?
Oh, really?
Hmm. Well, maybe they were moving in where Google once was. the other interesting news is 4K video now support on YouTube. I had a look there. I don't believe it. But the pictures were very nice.
4K video, that's like what they use in cinemas to do cinema screening.
What does that mean? What does the 4K refer to?
Well, it's just really pixel size. But there's four levels of television production. There's standard def, which is what we had and probably still watch if you go to one of the 21s or 91s or whatever it is. Yeah. Then you move up in the world to high definition. There's a few flavors in there, but traditionally 1080 is the next one up.
1080 lines, yep.
Which is HD. Then we've got 2K on top of that, which is a 2000 pixel image, and a 4000 pixel image, or 4096, I think, don't quote me on that, is 4K, and 4K is the biggest in HD that you can get. And as you said, Graham, that's what you see, either 2K or 4K images when you go to the digital cinemas these days. They don't use film no more. It's just a big television projector.
Yes, with a...
Quite often two of them, so they can do 3D.
Big hard drive under the bench.
That's the one.
Yeah.
So they get a disk drive these days, so they don't get film things. Much. The couriers have never had it so good these days.
And I bet they use BitTorrent to distribute it to all their cinemas.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right. Sony e-reader, there's a new one of those coming out. What else happened this week? Microsoft is also saying that 64-bit computing is coming of age. Obviously, Windows 7 is taking off for them. They're also having a bit of a staff cut there at Microsoft at the moment, too, to make room for the new cloud stuff that they're doing. Mm. Oh, and this one, too, Graham, which I thought was interesting, a new free clock for atomic accuracy.
Oh, after what yes. Now, this talking is about interesting. Last week. Yeah.
Researchers developing a network of software-based clocks that could give data centers a network accuracy clock for free, because everyone uses GPS these days, don't they?
There's GPS and there's NTP, which is Network Time Protocol, which there's a whole collaboration of people that it's ultimately linked to GPS and atomic clocks, but yeah, distributes that in a way all around the world. But it's very important that your server and your client clocks be synced up
exactly
for security reasons, so that everything matches up in the logs. It's getting more and more important with faster computers and faster networks.
We should do a 3-hour show because time is
we
up.
Should
I'd spot Gadget website of the week after this.
Suffering suck it out. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
I'm not sure that they're driving competition out of the whole marketplace.
Well, no, they won't take a definitive stance on that either.
You don't win elections, you lose them.
Who's in the limelight for all the wrong reasons is the question.
Oh,
but it's great. That's outside Australia.
Lots of girls on the floor there doing development.
Flash is available for free and I can develop on it for free, can I?
No.
Most modern name servers dealt with that without even blinking.
Entertaining.
That's very hard to do when it's...
it really is hard to
simulate it.
Informative.
It's a glorified phone, but it's...
Independent.
That's their own stupidity.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I agree.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
See, there's some things you just got to do on.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. Oh, this thing is amazing.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole.
I've been told to quell all rumours and speculation currently in the chat room that Tech Talk Radio will not, cannot and won't be doing a 3-hour episode anytime soon.
Well, except for certain upcoming specials, is it?
There might be upcoming specials.
The end of season special.
The end of the year. What happens at the end of the year?
Santa comes.
We go and have a nice dinner somewhere together.
That's right, we do.
And watch a movie. And, yes. And press play and let a 3-hour episode run to air.
That habit at work.
This week's gadget, Clocky the Alarm Clock Droid. This is an alarm clock, but not just any alarm clock, Graham.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
Do you have trouble getting up in the morning?
Yes.
I know I do. That was a load
I'm
of
notorious
questions.
For it.
You are.
I have two bio droids at home that get me up in the morning. So.
Two bio droids, two human droids. The Clocky Alarm Clock Droid is fitted with wheels of its own and an internal motor and actually runs away from you and hides if you don't wake up. Clocky will give you one chance to get up, but if you snooze, you lose. Clocky will jump off your nightstand, wheel around your room, and look for a place to hide. It will then keep beeping until you actually get up and
fantastic.
Find it.
Fantastic. Oh, what was this?
Off button.
I want to get one of these for kids, if nothing else.
You can set your snooze time up to 9 minutes. If you hit snooze once, it starts to run away. It can jump up to 3 feet.
3 feet?
It can move on wood and carpets. The alarm will beep in a random pattern just to annoy you and make you wake up. And it's available in almond, white, aqua, mint, and
sounds
mustard
like my
orange.
Wife.
It's only
just the colours are annoying.
They are. It's the colours themselves are just annoying. $49.99 US, and it's available from caboodle.com. That's our gadget, Andrew. Clocky, the alarm clock droid.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
My wife informs me that I'm getting one of those alarm clocks for Christmas in the chat room. The website this week is livetraffic.vicroads.vic.gov.au. Now, this is a Victorian-centric website.
This isn't the one you emailed me.
It's not the one I emailed you at all. Dozens of live road traffic cameras can be accessed.
Can you say change lights now?
No, can't. You can't type in what you want to do.
Definitely not the one.
There are still images from each camera.
You've got to spell it right, otherwise it doesn't work.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, I found that.
I'll say it again slowly and with feeling. Livetraffic.vicroads.vic.gov.au.
www.vic.gov.au. Still images.
Look at this.
Yeah, from each camera are updated every minute or so. It's great for checking the traffic conditions if you're about to run out the door and hop in your car and you're going to hit a freeway or similar nearby. So, as I said, dozens and dozens of cameras there, and there's still images updated regularly.
If you've got an iPhone, you want to get the Quota application because it does this. I'm just about to hold it up to the webcam.
There you go. Andrew's got an application for this. Now, I know. People like Stryker and Warlock live in Sydney, so I've got a bonus supplemental website. Another tab, Graham, you ready? www.rta.nsw.gov.au / traffic reports. So that's the New South Wales.
I don't know whether you can see that in the webcam. Holding it up.
Andrew's got an iPhone.
You can see a whole
app.
Lot of pictures there, yeah.
Vic traffic cams. Look at that.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? And if they're pretty well real time, because if you wave as you go past and do a refresh, you'd normally see yourself.
You can see yourself, yeah, can good. You? Good. Very yeah. good. I'll put these in the show notes, and there's other ones there for other states around us and capital cities around Australia. So if you've got another one...
I was about
one,
to say, you've just offended everybody who's not in Sydney or Melbourne.
Of course I have. Of course I have. But if you can see our traffic outside of Sydney want. Or Melbourne, yeah, if you want to look at our traffic, you can. If you've got your
and laugh at us, yeah.
If you've got your own traffic webcams, pop them up in the show notes as well. There's
oh,
our website.
Yeah, fantastic.
There.
Yeah, hit the forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
Why not? Livetraffic.vicroads.vic.
Check out the stack in the tunnel.
.au.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
This week's Odd Spot comes via Judy from on email. Brisbane is investigating the possibility of delivering broadband to the city's houses by using sewerage pipes.
Oh, I saw this.
To carry fibre optic cable.
How's this work?
Lord Mayor Campbell Newman on Saturday last week said residents could soon have access to next generation broadband at no cost to ratepayers under the proposal. He says council is in discussions with a UK company...
This was a
company,
Google April Fool's Day joke about 8 years ago. I remember this.
...that is seeking to put broadband fibre optic into the city using sewer pipes.
Who band or broad poo?
Yeah. Oh, yes, Google was
get your special kit and you drop the lead down the toilet you and you flush it and it goes and find its way into the sewer pipe and plugs in.
Special people in the sewerage system are plugging them in.
Can I just say that if you're living in Brisbane, I'd be voting for Labor because you'll need Conroy's filtering system very shortly.
Mr. Newman said the council's objective is to get next-gen broadband into Brisbane. We want 100 megabits per second fibre to the home, and we want it now.
Through the plumbing.
Fibre to the toilet.
Yeah, fibre to the toilet. Mr. Newman said, unlike the federal government's NBN, which had no firm timetable, the sewer pipe alternative could be installed quite fast. Thank you, Judy, for that contribution.
Fantastic, Judy.
Phenomenal.
Thank you. I think Judy was a relatively new-time listener, I think, too, from reading the email. So welcome aboard, Judy. Keep sending them through.
And
we love those sort of things.
You've got right into the spirit of the show and right onto our level
perfect.
Straight away.
Yes. Toilet humour to finish the show. You can't go wrong. All right, stay tuned for our next show, which won't be 3 hours long. Same time, same station, wherever you're listening to us. Around Australia, around the web. You have been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Talk to you next week.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Expert opinion from Adam Turner and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.